You're listening to the Jason Gregor Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. All Silverados and Truck Nation overlay, 10 to 15 specials with cash rebates or payments. All trucks are showing max factory rebates. Learn more at LakewoodChev.com. Woodley, lots to discuss on the goaltending front. Now, I want to ask you, and I know that maybe you're a goalie, so it might be biased, but Carey Price, one of the best goalies in the league, I don't think there's any question, but he ultimately can't impact your offense by any stretch, or really your neutral zone play, unless every now and then he saucers a sweet dish up there. But $10.5 million, when you look at goalies making that much, does it lead to success for your team?
Well, you know what I'm going to say? Just give us all the money. That's the default answer. Give the goalies all the money. Listen, I get the question. I said it when Lundqvist signed his current deal, which at the time was the highest paid one, and actually even the deal before that, that it would come to look like a bargain because you were buying his best years. Actually, I guess it would be the deal before. The question on this one is the length, and are you buying his best years long-term and the injury history? And I get the questions about, can you build a winning team if you've got that much tied up in goal? I mean, obviously, take a look at the Dallas Stars. For all the talk of them investing $10 million in their net last year, they had to buy out one of the two guys that they paid, you know, that amount to in the Emmy this year. So I'm kind of torn on this one. Is it the best way to build the Stanley Cup winner? Maybe not. Obviously, we've seen a rookie in Matt Murray win the last two for Pittsburgh. You know, we've seen sort of lesser paid guys win and then get paid. That said, I think much like Lundqvist, it's more a matter of is it harder to build a team, a winning team around him? Yes, because you have less money to do so. But is he good enough, much like Lundqvist, to sort of keep a mediocre team in contention, and if you do ever get a decent team in front of him, you're probably going to win? My answer to that is yes, too. And so Lundqvist has earned everything he's gotten. He got them to a cup final, but he still doesn't have a cup. And we could be saying the same thing about Carey Price when this contract ends, but I do believe he's in that tier of goaltenders that can make a bad team good, make a bad team a playoff team even, and give a mediocre team a shot at winning a cup. Obviously, if you can build a good team around him, and it is tougher with all that money tied up, and he's shown what he can do with a good team. World Cup, last two Olympics. I mean, give him a good team, he wins. It's harder to give him a good team, but that's not his fault. That's on the management. And I just think I like your chances better, I guess, of winning with a less than great team, and there's no indications they're going to have one in front of him for a while now if you've got Carey Price healthy and in net.
Kevin Woodley from InGo Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. What do you make of Grubauer in Washington? Obviously, there must be a very good respect from both sides. He declines arbitration. Then he signs the one-year extension, and the Capitals move some other guys for a guy who's going to be their backup and, you know, at the most probably play 25 games, at the most.
Well, you know, I said before that he was on the market because if he hit a home run in arbitration, they probably couldn't afford to keep him. Now, they moved Johansson and freed up some money, although they're still tight. They've still got, what, little less than five million dollars under the cap and five positions to fill out. So listen, I think that in their perfect world, they could have moved Grubauer and gotten something in return, maybe even kept Johansson if possible, and then also just brought up Copley on a $650 salary. I mean, not huge savings, $650 to $1.5 million, but you know, they're so tight that $900,000 matters, and I do believe they think Phoenix Copley can do the job. What happened was there wasn't a market for Grubauer, not with everything going on around Vegas. And so when nothing materialized, when no trade materialized, and there were talks with several teams, you know, the decision becomes, can we afford to keep him after you move Johansson? And I think for Grubauer's case, a lot of people thought, why not take arbitration? Part of the answer is you're looking at, I mean, take a look at what happened in the free agency market. What was the going price for a backup goaltender? I mean, it was basically $2.5 million. Now, unrestricted free agent signings don't really affect restricted free agent status in arbitration. But when you look at his numbers, 926 last year, 923 career, or I may have those backwards, and you take a look at some of the restricted free agent contracts that have been handed out, I think of the $4 million a season on the eve of arbitration, at the doorstep of arbitration that Peter Mrazek got last year. Think of Jacob Markstrom, who is a restricted free agent, is signed a contract that kicks in this next year that's going to pay him over three, and his numbers are nothing compared to what Grubauer's done. So maybe he would have hit a home run, but maybe not, Jason. If the number was somewhere under two, which I think the Capitals confidently believed it would be, and you're Grubauer, now you've risked locking yourself in with that team for two more seasons when you could hit a home run after a trade with just one more good season. So I think for Grubauer, it was about not getting locked up for 2 years. For the Capitals, it was, okay, this wasn't plan A, but at the plan B, we look pretty good as a weakened team who's going to rely more heavily on goaltending this year, having Grubauer and Holtby for one more season. And then next year, without the distraction of Vegas and all that meant to free agency and goaltending and sort of a lot of the uncertainty surrounding his position, maybe they can cash in better on Grubauer as an asset. And they've got Copley on a two-way this year. Next year, it's a one-way, and almost guaranteed, as long as he doesn't falter, that he'll evolve into that backup for them moving forward starting next season.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Goaltending coach, the carousel kind of changes all the time. We just saw the Canucks. Rolly Melanson leaves them, goes back to goes to New Jersey. He'll be reunited with Corey Schneider. How much of that do you think was Corey Schneider talking to the GM?
Ooh, that's or the a good coach? Question. And, I'll be honest, I can't answer that. This is a tough one. I do know that Corey, through text, is excited about having Rolly back. But, that said, I think he built a pretty good relationship with Chris Terreri, and I don't think it's fair. Corey's been a really good goaltender for a long time. Last year was his first sort of blip the other way. 908 save percentage after a career consistently around 924. So I don't know that it's necessarily fair to blame that exclusively on the goaltending coach, but for whatever reason, they were looking to make a change, and reuniting him with someone who was a big part of his success early in his pro career, Corey played with a little more aggressively, not recklessly, but he was definitely an outside-in goaltender, a goaltender especially off the rush that liked to come a fair ways out and then time his retreat with the play. And I actually remember early in his career in a couple of call-ups that didn't go so well where he was getting burned on one-timers off lateral plays because he wasn't set. Melanson really kind of reeled him in, put him in the blue paint, and made him a much more conservative inside-out goaltender, and that was a big part of his evolution. So they have a history together. Rolly, who is just really good at working, and it usually benefits the backup most, but working game-like situations in practice to keep his guys sharp, that's one of his strengths. He's going to go in there knowing exactly what Corey Schneider needs, what type of work he thrives on. And so if you're looking, if you're the Devils and you just want to make sure that bounce back happens and quick, as you've added all these other pieces to your team this offseason, it's not a bad idea to reunite him with a goaltending coach he's already had a lot of success with.
Well, Kev, we have a lot of Oiler fans. I don't know how much research you've looked into it. Cam Talbot just turned 30, and I wonder what. There's obviously outliers and exceptions to every different goalie. And, he was a guy who didn't have a ton of miles as far as a starter early in his 20s. So I don't know if it's fair to say, but a lot of them wondering how many good years do you think Talbot has left, or is it too hard to predict?
Oh, that is a tough one because, the guys that typically play into their mid to late 30s are kind of that elite. You think of the Luongos, you think of Tim Thomas, you think of, the guys that survived that long, it's because they're in the top end of goaltenders in the league. And, Cam's just gotten there. But that doesn't mean he can't be a guy that plays a lot for the same reasons that he was so good this year amid all those questions, including asked here by myself on this show about the workload. Takes care of himself physically. You're right about the mileage. And frankly, just plays a style that's not overly taxing. We haven't seen him have a lot of problems in terms of lower body or hips yet. So I don't think there's a science to it. The science, the analytics would tell you he's already on the decline, like in terms of where goalies peak and where that where it starts to drop off, and that a lot of them fall off a cliff just a couple years from now for him. But when you look at him peaking in what is supposed to be beyond his peak years, and you recognize some of the tactical and technical adjustments that have occurred later in that sort of scale, that that timeline age-wise, first going to New York with Benoit Allaire, now in Edmonton working with Dustin Schwartz, and again, an increased layer of efficiency through his work with Dustin Schwartz. I can, it's hard to kind of describe it, but I can show it on video where he's arriving to set position earlier. He's arriving square. He's not chasing plays. Everything is sort of staying in front of him. And that efficiency in his movement is going to increase his longevity because he's putting less wear and tear on his body. He's not having to go into goalie 911 mode as often as others might. And so as unscientific as it is, the signs are there that he's not going to be a guy who falls off a cliff in a year or two, that there is longevity. But I would not want to, you know, say, hey, let's go Carey Price and sign him till he's 38, or let's go Roberto Luongo and make it till he's 41 or 42 with a lot of confidence. I just think there are a lot of indications that it's a little too early to worry about the end being near.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. Kevin, now, I don't want to get you start twitching or anything like that because it lasted so long last year, but what are you hearing on the chest protector size for goaltenders?
You caught me a little on off guard on this one. I'd be honest with you, Jason, I was going to dig into this one when I got back from the vacation that starts on Wednesday. But I haven't heard anything in terms of guys having it. I've heard differing messages. At one point, the NHL was looking at having a third party, and we talked about this last summer, having a third party sort of build a prototype for the chest protector. And yet when I talk to the equipment companies themselves, they're working on versions that they believe will pass the NHL smell test. And they've got NHL goalies even last year that were trying them late in the season. Again, units that had not been approved as the new design, but that they believe would fit within those parameters. That sounds great, but in the past what we've seen is the parameters move or the parameters haven't gotten small enough or haven't shrunk enough to the NHL's liking and they change them. And hey, we're mid-July already. I know the guys want to have this stuff by mid-August, so I would suggest that it needs to be on its way or at least in the manufacturing process soon. So equipment companies haven't told me that anything's been signed off on yet. But I would hope that that's coming soon. And like I said, when I get back from this pending vacation, I will have a complete update for you.
Well, based on what happened last year, it's safe to say that they would be very comfortable asking the goalies to switch mid-season again, right?
Yeah, you really don't want to do that with a chest and arm protector. Listen, I hope the lesson has been learned. There were some rumblings as late as April or May where guys were saying, I think we're going to be right back to where we were last year with the pants when it comes to the chest and arm. The difference is the chest and arm, as I've said before, it's such a complex unit. You know, you're talking about a couple hundred different pieces that have to be cut and sewn and stitched together. And you leave a half an inch gap in one of those and you can have a broken rib or a broken bone. We haven't seen them a lot. I think Marty Biron, his broken clavicle was the last one we saw from a shot. But I'm telling you, and I've had a veteran say this to me, if they don't leave time for testing, we do not want to be the guinea pigs in the NHL. These are the hardest shooters. We see 100 shots plus in practice. That can't be where your testing is done. And like I said, at least one veteran has said to me, if there isn't any testing done and we are the guinea pigs, and I break a collarbone at this stage in my career, it's not going to end well. He would consider action because in their minds, this is really a safety issue if you don't do it right. And that's why I think what we may see is these versions that equipment companies are working on right now, because they may be accepted and this may be the way we go. From what I've seen of them, they don't look that much smaller, so you may get some pushback. But whatever you do, if it's going to be a radical departure, if you're going to go third party, here's the prototype, now you guys all got to build it, I think we needed to be there before now. and anything that's changed radically needs to be tested. And this, as an American hockey, as a top prospect told me, it can't just be in the AHL either. Don't think it's okay because the veterans don't want to be guinea pigs to slap something that might be inferior on a young prospect and potentially cost him a half a season because of a broken bone. It's a big industry. It's a $4 billion league. Do the testing. Do it right. Make sure it's safe before you make drastic changes. And hopefully we'll be there. Hopefully the lessons were learned with the pants. But like I said, as late as sort of April and May, I was already hearing some guys who were predicting we'd run into the same problem as we did last year. So we'll see how this plays out in the next couple of weeks.
Kev, that's a great answer, man. But a lot of us non-goalies, I was like, yeah, suck it up, Buttercup. But that does make a lot of sense. You know, the pants usually are in a position you're, you know, slimming down the pants wasn't really ever going to be a protection history, whereas the chest protector is a lot different.
It is a different level. As a guy who's lost an appendix to a slap shot, it is a different sort of. There are more important body parts above the waistline. I should be careful what I say there, but we have cups. Let's put it that way. We've already done our segment on goalie cups and three actual layers of cups for goalies. So there are more vital organs above the waistline, let's put it that way. But the other thing is, hey, don't dismiss, we may not have had the injuries, and full credit to the NHL for having some flexibility with those pants to make sure guys are protected in spots. I was genuinely worried about it. But I tell you, some of the photos that I got from guys and some of the bruises from the inside of the knee all the way up to the groin from shots that caught soft spots in the pants. Let's just say when you see the damage that can be done by one shot hitting a soft area, you realize how important it is that none of those areas are left exposed, especially up and around the collarbone.
Kev, have a great holiday. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Late July. Thanks, guys. Thanks for everything, and we'll talk to you soon.
You betcha. Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com.